This episode of the Seabros Fishing Podcast is brought to you by Monahans Marine. We recently partnered with Monahans and are excited to be working with a local marine business that has been serving the South Shore of Massachusetts since 1961. For decades, the crew at Monahans has been helping generations of boat owners with outboard parts, boat service, marine equipment, and fishing tackle. Their professionalism and passion for being on the water has made them one of the most reputable boating headquarters in the Northeast. Monahans is located on Washington Street in Weymouth, and they are currently a Jones Brothers and Tidewater Boats retailer and have the most well-stocked inventory of Yamaha outboards, parts, and rigging in Mass. The entire staff and crew of technicians have decades of experience, and as a recent addition, Monahans has built and rigged out a brand new 4,000-square-foot offshore and inshore fishing tackle shop. They are fully stocked with everything needed for offshore canyon fishing, nearshore bluefin tuna fishing, striped bass fishing, and more. We're excited to be able to use this new space as a home base to maintain our own tackle and charter fishing fleet, as well as use it as a spot to film some upcoming podcasts and workshops. As a part of this partnership, Monahans has been generous enough to give all listeners a discount on anything in their store and facility. So when shopping at Monahans, if you use promo code MBG24 at checkout, you'll receive 10% off any purchase in their tackle or marine department. To learn more about Monahans Marine, their location, boat and engine inventory, or parts, visit monahansmarine.com. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Mass Bay Guides. Mass Bay Guides is our family-run charter fishing fleet that's based out of Scituate, Massachusetts. We've been providing anglers with the ultimate fishing adventure for over 20 years. Whether you're looking to put together a multi-boat corporate fishing trip, a trip for your family, or you're an avid angler looking to catch a giant bluefin tuna, our crew will do anything it takes to make sure you and your friends and your family have a great day on the water. To book a trip with us, please visit the Mass Bay Guides website, www.massbayguides.com. You can search prices, trip information, and get the latest reports and links to our social media pages there. You can also find us directly on Facebook and Instagram and just search Mass Bay Guides. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Black Oak LED Lighting. Black Oak LED manufactures high-quality LED lighting at a reasonable price for the fishing, boating, hunting, and military communities. If you're looking to upgrade the lighting system on your boat, Black Oak LED provides many different options of marine-grade lighting, including cockpit spreader lights, LED light bars, undergunnel lights, and underwater lights. We've had Black Oak LED lighting on both of our boats for several seasons now, with zero failure, zero issues. They're an essential tool for us to help ensure safe rides home to and from our fishing grounds in low light and poor visibility conditions. And their series of marine spreader lights are also a great tool for getting bait fish to school around your boat in the dark. If you're re-rigging your boat or outfitting a new vessel, check out Black Oak LED for your lighting systems. Make sure to use the promo code GIANTBLUEFIN for 20% off your order. This episode is brought to you by Afuera Coffee Company. Afuera Coffee Company was started by and for people who not only love exploring the outdoors, but care deeply about restoring and preserving our environments and habitats so everyone can enjoy them for years to come. To help work towards this, they donate 5% of all sales to charities and organizations currently donating to Captains for Clean Water. Everything done at Afuera has sustainability as the main focus, sourcing beans from certified Rainforest Alliance farms, using compostable coffee bags, mailers, stickers, packaging, and of course, donating a portion of sales, not just profits, to protect Mother Nature. It is their dream that through many small decisions, such as choosing and brewing your go-to coffee, that we can all make a substantial difference in the health and cleanliness of our world. Afuera is doing it right and makes a tasty product. If you want to give Afuera Coffee a try, visit afueracoffee.com and use promo code MassBayGuides for 15% off your first order. We have a returning guest on this episode of the podcast. Captain Tommy Howd joins us again to talk a lot about sword fishing. talk about much more than that, but specifically in this one, Tommy goes through what his nighttime sword fishing program looks like. Everything from baits he likes to use, rigging, where he likes to set up generally, how he makes adjustments throughout a night of fishing, everything. It was awesome. Go into a lot of detail. He talks a lot about his new program that he's a part of, family fun fishing, tournament fishing. We talk a little bit about hunting. And we also talk about an initiative that he and his family have going on currently, Tokus Friends, where they provide service dogs to veterans, which is a great initiative. And yeah, it was awesome. It's always fun to sit down and talk to Tommy. He's a great guy, hell of a fisherman. And we think you'll enjoy this conversation that we had. So without further ado, please welcome back to the podcast, Captain Tommy Howd. Welcome to the Sea Bros Fishing Podcast, where we follow three words of wisdom. You can't catch them if you don't have a hook in the water. Always trust your instincts. And the last, you'll just have to keep listening. Stay tight.
Am I coming off or what? Get that down. Showing you on that rock.
Well,
dude, cheers to St. Paddy's Day.
Cheers.
Yeah. So we got these up.
A little Irish cricket. Oh, yeah.
God, I hope it'll explode all over me.
Oh, you shook yours up there, Bri?
Yeah, I just got it frothed.
You look a good froth.
I don't mind a good froth. Cheers, boys.
Cheers.
When was the last time?
This is our first morning beer on this thing.
It is.
We talked for like 3 seconds at Castafari.
Yeah, I was pretty busy that day.
Yes.
You came here like...
I was coming up for air.
Smell like Ballyhoo and fucking sword squids.
Yeah, I was coming up for air every time I walked out of one of those rooms. Yeah, D had me busy.
That was like a good
back
job.
To back to back to back. Yeah, it was. It was good.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people there.
How many baits did you rig? What did you rig?
Let's see. So I actually only did swordfish bait rigging.
Yep.
So I did couple of nighttime squids, and I did a what did we have? We had a false albacore, so I went and kind
probably
of
like a strip
did
bait.
A strip bait out of that. Kind of went through that whole process, and then I rigged an eel for sword fishing.
Yeah, slithery snake.
Yeah,
slithery little snake.
Yeah, so it was good. It was good. And then I went through like a couple workshops on like how to set up soup to nuts on the whole deep drop setup and the nighttime swordfish stuff. So yeah, it was good.
What's your least favorite sword bait to rig?
Ooh, least. That's a good question.
Probably the squid, just because they freaking stink. And, you know, you get cuts on your hands a lot. Like, you know, you spend a lot of time out there. And the ink from the squid, when they get into your cuts or whatever the squid juices are, absolutely burns. It stings so bad.
It's so true. Squid juices is a great fucking name for this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Squid juice.
Yeah. Squid juice is probably the most vile.
That'd be a great.
It really is.
That'd be a great, like, alcohol drink, squid juice. Right? It probably exists already.
Should we trademark that now?
Trademarked.
Trademarked.
Right now. Sea Bro squid juice. What's your favorite bait to rig? What's your favorite daytime sword bait?
You know, there's a couple people that asked me that at Damon's show. And so I think my favorite bait is a strip bait.
Yeah.
So it's very dependent. And what I mean by that is if the squid are actually pretty bad on the bottom, like there's a lot of squid around.
Yeah.
They'll mess up your baits pretty quick. If they're, and you kind of want to be in some bait, But if the squids aren't too thick, then actually I'd like to use a squid bait. Rigged properly, I think the squid bait is awesome. The strip baits are probably my favorite bait to fish. I just think that, like, if you've got a fresh skippy or mahi or whatever, and you can make a strip bait out of that, that's primo.
Yeah.
But it's a lot more involved to kind of rig it up right. So my kind of go-to is an eel, because it's like I can rig one of those up in 2 minutes and have it fishing.
And they're tough as shit.
And they're tough as shit. Yeah. And, you know, you can catch 5 swordfish on the same eel.
They can survive a couple sword squid attacks.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Makes sense.
We're going right into the deep end. I think we should step back a little bit. Tell us about your 2022 season. Last time we talked was
2 years ago on
this. Was it 2 years ago?
It really?
Because we didn't do one last season. We did one the season before, I believe.
So what happened? What were like your highs and lows of last year? Where did you fish? Who did you fish with?
Yeah, so I guess the highs was... So I've been helping out, I guess, as advisor, part-time captain.
You're consultant, right?
Consultant. Yeah.
Aquatic consultant.
Yeah. So I've been fishing with this family, a really nice family. And they had a 52 Viking. And after we started fishing together, the owner decided that he wanted to up the ante and build a 58. So that's kind of he made that decision in May of 21. And so we fished the 21 season on the 52 Express, which was a sweet, sweet boat. Hell of a haul. And then they sold that boat in the fall. And then I started going down to New Jersey. I went down a handful of times to kind of just oversee the build and kind of advise on like how to set up the bridge, how to set up different things, you know. Viking is pretty stock, but you have some customization options to it. Mm. And so I kind of helped through the build process. And then we took delivery of the boat. You know, just like anything, in this pandemic age, it got delayed.
Yeah.
And also the marine industry kind of runs behind at times. So we didn't take delivery until after July 4th. So our season was a little bit shorter in 2022 because we didn't get back up until July 10th or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was a bit of a race because I remember we took delivery of the boat on a Friday, and Damon's tournament started on that following Tuesday. Captain's meeting was Tuesday night.
Jesus.
So I had a brand new boat, fresh out of delivery, hadn't worked out any kinks with the boat at all. Yeah. So I spent 5 days straight, just like, you know, all the little stuff that you don't even really think about, like rigging all the outriggers, you know, dialing in every like little bit. Like,
yeah.
And so it was a bit of an adventure getting everything squared up.
How many anxiety attacks did you have?
I had quite a few. I had quite a few. And then you get to, you're like doing something and you're just like, damn it. I don't have that tool. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's just like even the small stuff of like all the tools. And I tried to do my best, like up front ahead of time, like get stuff laid out and like, okay, I'm going to bring all this stuff to the boat. But, you know, you always forget something.
Totally.
And everything's always so far away.
Yeah. And then you have the anxiety of like, oh, your first trip is going to be a tournament. Cause the owner was like, yeah, we want to make
break sure we're it in
the tournament. I was like, oh, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
How was it for you guys? How was the tournament?
We had a good time. We had a couple pulled hooks that were unfortunate. But we caught our big eyes. We got our swordfish. Unfortunately, the swordfish that we did catch didn't make weight, so he didn't get the extra points or the big swordfish award for that one. We pulled the hook on. We spent a couple hours day timing with the hand crank setup, and I think we ended up going 1 for 4 on swordfish and 1 for 1 on big eyes. We caught a big eye on the drop during the tournament.
That's sick.
Which was fun. But we had one of the swords that we lost was a really solid fish, but it's part of the game, especially when you're hand cranking them. It's harder to get the hook set sometimes.
Yeah, makes sense. Can't ask dude, for a much better trip than that.
That's with
5 weeks prep though.
Five days. Yeah, we caught as many yellowfins as we wanted. We caught our two big eyes and our swordfish. It just was, you know, just didn't have the big Mondo swordfish that we were looking for. And we didn't happen to have a blue marlin. So we weren't in the money this year, but ready to go again next year.
That's cool.
This coming season.
How was the rest of the year after that?
It was good. It was good. We had some really good fishing in the canyons. There was a couple of trips where, you know, and I'd rather swordfish than anything else, which is kind of stating the obvious. And actually, the owner of the boat is very similar. He wants to go catch swordfish. He loves to eat them. And so there was, I don't know if you guys remember, there was a little bit of time where some really nice water pushed in, and there was quite a bit of blue marlin and wahoos in there.
Sick.
And I was like, all right, well, we're going to focus this coming trip. Let's just spend a half a day trying to catch a couple marlin.
Yeah.
He's like, well, what's the point of that?
It's not a tournament. We can't, and we're not going to kill them. We can't eat them. We're going sword fishing.
Yeah.
And we got out there, and it was actually rough as shit. It was rougher than we were expecting it to be. And it was too rough to daytime deep drop. And so we put out the spread and caught a couple of wahoo and went 1 for 2 on blue ones. It was good fishing. So yeah, we had some good marlin fishing. I think we had every trip but one, we caught a swordfish. That's
wild.
It was pretty fun.
Unbelievable.
It's amazing that you could dial it into that point that it's like, I mean, obviously you never know, but I mean, you have acquired the skills now to kind of figure out like how to get a bite almost every trip.
Yeah. It's kind of like understanding, you know, where you want to go fish to begin with. And it's like, okay, you know, What's our game plan? How much time are we going to spend sword fishing?
Yeah.
Are we going to do some daytime sword fishing? If so, then, you know, that means that we should go here as opposed to there. And, it's fun. And we did catch quite a few nighttime ones. The nighttime ones were all smaller, but.
Does the daytime or say morning troll fishing designate at all where you want to sword fish? Like say you're out in kind of somewhat prime swordfish territory, one spot is good, you know, for trolling in the morning for yellowfin and big eyes or whatever, and you want to set up daytiming. Are you focused more in on where the life is, or do you kind of go where you want to go? I don't know if that question made any sense.
It does, and I think generally speaking the swordfish are going to be where the light is.
Yeah,
I mean they're opportunistic feeders. They're going to be, you know, where the bait is, and the tunas are where the bait is too. So generally speaking, the big eyes and the swordfish will be in the same vicinity. Sometimes the yellowfins, maybe not quite so much, because sometimes the yellowfins are up on the bank a little bit more.
Yeah.
And so the swordfish and the big eyes will stay out a little bit deeper there, but.
So you want to go into night fishing? Because we did daytiming on the first.
Do you want a rapid fire?
Yeah, I got some good ones too. You go first.
I was just going to ask them the same one we've been asking everybody that fishes the canyons.
Which one?
So if you had a week to 2 weeks to spend out there to hone in a tactic that you've never tried out there or that you've wanted to spend more time trying, what would that tactic be?
Oh, wow. I only get to pick one.
Well, you can pick a couple if you want. Or like just something you want to just put the whatever daytime gear away, whatever gear away, and just
no pressure.
No pressure, and just try this. You know, something that you're confident would probably work, but you've always wanted to try it. This episode is sponsored by Costa Del Mar. If you didn't know already, Costa makes some of the best fishing sunglasses on the market. They have a ton of frame options and offer a wide variety of lens colors. And their 580 color enhancing polarized lens technology is tried and true. We are big fans of their blue mirror lenses for our offshore fishing charters and their green mirror lenses for inshore. They've stepped up their game big time, and they offer a great new line of performance fishing apparel. We've been wearing a lot of it the past few seasons on charters. We found that all of it's well-designed, comfortable, durable, quick-drying. It can handle a beating. To check out Costa's great selection of sunglasses, apparel, and wide variety of other products, visit costadelmar.com.
It may not be like sword fishing stuff. It could be something else.
Yeah.
Hmm. You have some time, I think.
I think one of the things that I'd love to do would be, again, if you had the weather for it and everything, is spending some time really just focused on blue marlin.
Yeah.
I think that would be pretty fun. There's certainly enough of them around.
Yeah.
But you know, given all of the other species that we target, we just haven't really focused on, like, let's go have a couple trips where the only thing we want to do is go blue marlin fishing. That's one. And then the other one is I'd love to do some kite fishing out in the canyons. I think that would be pretty cool, especially, you know, once when the tunas are, you know, really firing.
Yeah.
Out there, I think that would be really cool to just kind of, you know, bump troll a kite around.
Mm-hmm. Sick.
And you know, bring some baits and kind of see what happens. I think that would be pretty cool. I'd like to do that. I'd like to try and figure out a way to do that while daytiming. So you're fishing your sword bait and you got a kite up and you get a bait away from the boat and you know, just see what happens. See if something comes up.
I think if you did the whole like
squid thing too,
dead squid, live squid, or dead flyers on the kite,
100%
while you were day dropping, I bet you would annihilate a tuna or two or something cool every time.
Yeah.
If there was a way to like just bring like a well full of mackerels out there.
Oh my God.
Throw a mackerel.
I think about that all the time.
Underneath a kite while I'm just kind of drifting around for the swordfish.
I think the bogey would do it.
Yeah, I think so too. Or slow trolling live macs, like big corker live macs out there. Like nothing but live bait and like a couple dredges just or something.
Walk like the salmon capistrano.
I think the tunas would too. Yeah. I think you'd catch like much, much nicer tunas doing that.
Just they wouldn't survive in the heat, but the pogies, you could probably do it.
Mm.
Potentially small bluefish.
Mm.
And they, you know, they go way up 76, 78 degree, like bay water and shit.
If you could get some skippies would be awesome.
Yeah. Be sick.
We did that this past year. We
Skippy on the kite.
We bridled up a couple of skippies.
Dude, and your kite would have to be like a fucking
Millennium
Falcon. One of those like fucking stunt kites. Like you'd have to kite have surfing kites. That'd be fucking dope though.
That'd be sick. But going back to the dead thing, I think like a good rigged dead squid on the kite, you know, slacked off a little bit would be sick, especially on like a little bit of a breezy day.
Mm.
You know, I know those guys that are fishing dead squids are putting like sometimes they put like a big blown up balloon or whatever above their leader. So it grabs the wind every once in a while
and moves
it.
Yep.
I think they'd be all over that thing.
Yeah.
Mm. You know,
I agree. I'm on the same train as you. I'd like to strictly blue marlin fish out there. Yep. Hardhead fishing and live bait fishing. Nothing but targeting big blue marlin.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Would be. Just spending like time trying to find baits. Mm. Like you go through skipjack, you like catch a few and you're like, oh, you know, you want to move on or whatever. But like, if you let's put out some of those like feathers and like, you know, little stuff and like load up on them and like really do it right.
Yeah. We did that sick. A little bit. We went to one of the buoys in the fall out there and we'd go by and grab a couple of skippies and then bridle them up and troll around a little bit.
Yeah.
Caught a couple of cork or yellow fins on the skippies.
Really?
And we had one bite that I'm pretty sure was a blue one. It came off pretty damn quick. We did catch a blue one that trip. But that was on a ballyhoo, not a skippy.
Yeah.
But it would be pretty cool to catch a blue one on the skippy. Hell like yes. That.
Thick.
Be fucking awesome.
I got one. We asked quite a few people this. Have you ever had a poop bite?
Oh gosh. Yeah.
What is your most entertaining poop bite you've had?
I think probably the funniest one.
Oh yeah, I love this shit.
The funniest one was I was fishing with my family, and we got a poop bite, and I came.
Were you pooping?
I was pooping. Okay. I was pooping, and my mom was in the cockpit. So like, this was like full on family trip. My mom was in the cockpit, and one of my brothers was in the cockpit. My father was probably sleeping up on the bridge and I just hear that when I'm pooping, like most of the time I won't shut the door. So I can, at least I can hear if the drag, and all of a sudden you just hear, I'm like, oh. We were bluefinning too. And I was like, there, we're on, let's go. And so I run out and I had, my mom was like screaming at me because I had toilet paper hanging out my ass.
Holy shit.
I was like, I don't want to lose this fish. Let's go. Yeah, that was a funny one.
Wow. I don't think out of all the
poop we've never had
a paper tail.
No.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That's a fucking good one.
I kind of like, if we're having some slow fishing, I'll actually say, all right, I'm going to go poop one up. And I'll go down below and try and poop one out, especially if we're sword fishing. Yeah. And we probably have hooked, I don't know, 5 or 6 fish while I've been pooping. I'll come back up and I'll be like, all right, got them on, boys. Nice job. My brothers have got it. You know, my brothers are dialed in. And so they'll hook them while I'm pooping.
That's so awesome. In our boat, when you get a poop bite, like when the drag goes, you can almost feel it run down the hull.
Yeah,
like you can feel the clicker go off, and you're like, ah.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, I'm all about the poop bites. I try. I think that you can poop them up.
I think there's something with that. I've had a couple nap bites, not long nap bites. Like it needs to just be like a quick 5-10 minute, you know, bit of shut eye. Like if you're napping for like hours at a time, I feel like that's bad luck.
For sure.
Yeah,
quick nap.
Yeah.
I don't really take too many naps. Maybe I'll get, like you said, I'll lay down for 10, 15 minutes or something like that. But
yeah,
not much sleeping.
No.
A lot of Mountain Dews.
Yes.
Not a lot of sleeping when we're out there. And I think that's like a big difference maker is like a lot of guys will go out there and as soon as the night comes around, it's like, let's make some dinner, put out a couple of sword rods and everybody gets some rest. And
yeah.
Yeah, I think that separates your kind of catching them just by accident versus you're catching them consistently because you're actually fishing.
Yeah, 100%.
I got one more rapid fire, and then I want to go right off what you just said.
All right.
Aluminum or copper crimps?
Oh.
This is kind of an open-ended question.
Yeah, so aluminum.
Aluminum overall?
Yeah. If I had to just pick one.
Yeah.
You do use coppers on occasion?
On occasion.
Aluminum? Yeah.
But mostly the aluminum.
Yeah.
Have you just had experiences with breakage and pulls and things with coppers?
Yeah. And, you know, I think the way that this basically the fishing that I'm doing most of the time, I've got perfect size aluminum crimp for my crimpers for the line that I'm using. Like right. I just have it more dialed. I'm just more comfortable with it.
Yeah. Same.
Same.
So I've got a set of crimpers for, I've got four sets of crimpers for different lines, and yep. I know where they're all at. And yep. Do some pull tests in the winter.
You're like the third or fourth person I know that does that. Different set for every line diameter for the most part. We only use two sets.
Dave does that too.
Dave does it too. Someone else I was talking to does that as well. We just use blue handles for 200 and under and the red handle big ones for 200 and over.
Yeah. I started using the Nyko Press crimps and crimper for my 180 fluoro. There's a perfect size crimp for that. And that's money. I haven't had a problem with that.
I feel like coppers, once you get up and over that like 150 line strength, you can kind of get away with it. Like when you start playing with like 130,
the stretch is elastic, can't stretch in the sleeve.
They have such sharp edges too.
Yeah.
You know? Thinner walled crimps. But those Nyko Press are a little bit thicker walled.
They're a lot thicker walled.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you started going right into nighttime, which is awesome because that's what we want to nerd out about.
Yes.
And you said, you know, staying awake and the preparation stuff is like the biggest trick in it all. What's like your... So if you wanted to target swordfish at night, we're not talking about like trying to troll late for big eyes and all that stuff. If you wanted to really get a nighttime swordfish, what's like your approach for like time of the day to start? Like, what are you usually trying to do? Like after trolling the majority of the...
Yeah, it's like take us through a trip. How many baits light. You have pre-rigged? How many rods? Timing?
Yeah, I mean, the timing to some extent depends on a lot of the conditions out there, right? If we know that it's going to be a nice drift, a nice night, then you're more inclined to start earlier. If it's kind of crappy out, then you start a little bit later. Then the other kind of big factor is when the moon rises. So a lot of our swordfish bites, both daytime and nighttime, come around the moon crossing the horizon. Hmm. So it's like either the moon set or the moon rise. I want to basically be effectively fishing in the hour before and hour after that.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that if, let's say the moon rises at 8:30.
Riley.
Bless you, buddy. Moon rises at 8:30. I don't want to be trying to set up at 8:30. Because
you want to be fishing.
I want to be fishing. I want to have the full spread out one way or another. And you get big eye bites like on the moon too. So, you know, if earlier in the season, while it's still lighter at 8:30, I might troll until 9:30. Right. And then set up for swordfish. If it's later in the season and the moon's at 8:30, then I'm going to be setting up at 7 so that, I'm fishing from 7:30 onwards.
Yeah.
In terms of the baits, I think having a solid eight squid baits rigged up before you leave the dock is preferable. Certainly before you start fishing. Especially, you know, if you're in a spot where there's a lot of bait and the squids will pick at your squid baits.
Yeah.
And that's like kind of one of my pet peeves is like when you're fishing and you don't have enough baits and you basically spend half of your time with no hooks in the water because you're not prepared.
Yeah.
And I've seen that on some of the boats that I've jumped on. It's like, okay, let's like have some baits ready. Let's have some baits thawed. Every time a bait comes in and it's chewed up, like we're going to re-rig that one so that you always have a supply of ones that you can just crimp on. It's not like a matter of like, oh, we bring this bait in. It's all messed up. We're going to keep that rod out of the water until we re-rig it.
Yeah.
Like I want to crimp on a new one and fire it right back out.
You're treating nighttime sword fishing like we treat
giant tuna
fishing, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, hooks in the water, which is amazing because I know, like, I've done it, and I know Brian's guilty of it, too. You get to a point of the night when you're, like, you're over it. Yeah. You know, you kind of just want to not think about it anymore. If it happens, it happens. You're not touching the baits.
Usually for me, it's when I'm dreading re-rigging all the ballyhoo for the next morning. That's when I start to lose morale a little bit. Yeah. Like
when you just went through 60 ballyhoo in one day.
You're like, You're like, you're like remembering, oh, how many little yellow fins are around.
And you're like re-rigging a sword bait. You still have like three dozen ballyhoo to rig. You're like, fuck.
Yeah.
You know?
But then it's times, and then you just say, but you know what? In February, I'm going to kick myself in the ass for not doing that.
Yeah, that's the way we
And you hook a 500 pounder because you were on it and you were just grinding
fish through of a lifetime.
Being tired. Yeah. It all goes away.
Yeah.
So 8 baits.
So, yeah, you're rigging 8 baits.
Yeah.
Back to kind of that.
Rigging 8 baits process. And ready to go. And then, you know, as you're fishing and you're checking your baits, you know, I start off by checking the baits once an hour and then kind of. You know, if they're not getting pecked at by the squids, then, you know, you go out hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever. Generally speaking, I'm not like drifting all night in one continuous drift anyway. I'm resetting a bunch of times. Reason being most of the time, well, a big reason is if you get a bite, I think that especially at night, the swordfish will swim in groups. I don't think there's just like singles, at least in the typical smaller size, you know, the 50 to 150 pound fish that we're typically catching in New England at night. A lot of times if we catch one and I go reset the boat just up drift of where we got bit, we'll get another bite.
Yeah.
And it's, a lot of times it's like almost instantaneous. It's weird. It's like they're following the boat. And then as soon as you stop and put out the baits.
We were just talking about this in one of our, we do this Patreon sessions. We were actually just talking about nighttime sword fishing with, you know, we haven't done nearly as much as you.
Nighttime like, canyon fishing.
Yeah. Nighttime canyon fishing. Yeah. And we were talking about how like, how common it is for some reason with swordfish bites. It's like the minute you set up or like. Or you start the boat and get ready to
reset or whatever.
Yeah. It's like, just like giant tuna fish, and sometimes they get like curious.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way they can't see your big bright light 500 feet away.
Right.
And they come over and check you out.
Yeah.
You know, so do you see that a lot?
I see that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the times the bites that happen like more like later into the drift, you know, after you've been set up for a while. A lot of those bites will be on our tip rod. So I try to always fish a tip rod that I'm fishing a little bit deeper and I'm moving it around quite a bit. Similar to like the daytime, you're moving the bait up and down.
Yeah.
You know, keeping an eye on the sounder, watching for any marks on the screen, moving the bait to where the marks are. We get a lot of bites that way.
Do you get like a down rod tuna fishing when they're eating deep? Do you get more of your bites on that rod or is it kind of percentage all spread out?
We definitely get a good percentage. I would say that I get more bites on my floater and my tip rod than I do on my other two setups.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm typically fishing a floater bait and then I'm fishing one just above the thermocline and one just below the thermocline, the scattering layer. So it's, you know, I'm usually fishing one that's like 100 feet and then one that's at like 175 feet. And then my tip rod, I'll be anywhere from 225 to 400.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Rodan Marine Systems. Technology in the marine industry seems to be improving at an exponential rate from year to year. And Rodan Marine is at the forefront of the GPS anchor and trolling motor industry. We've been running a Rodan GPS anchor on our 30-foot center console for a few seasons now, and it's been a game changer. With quick deployment and the simple push of a button, you can anchor down on a spot and stay within a few feet of your target location without having to deal with a traditional anchor, 20-plus feet of heavy chain, 400 feet of anchor line, obviously depending on how your setup is, but it's just very, very convenient and accurate. The fishing applications for using a Rodan are really endless. We find it extremely useful for both our inshore striped bass fishing as well as our offshore tuna fishing.
and the customer service and support at Rodin is amazing. They offer overnight shipping on parts and are available to troubleshoot any issues that you might have. We've put close to 1,000 hours on our motor and have had next to no issues. Any problems or questions that we've had, the team at Rodin responded quickly and has had parts to us the next day. If you're interested in taking the next step on improving your boat's anchoring system and giving yourself an advantage when it comes to fishing, make sure you check out Rodin Marine Systems' line of GPS anchors. Visit rodinmarine.com to check them out.
Interesting. And you're calling your floater bait your shallowest bait, or are you calling your floater bait an unweighted bait?
Yeah, it's my unweighted bait.
Yeah. Like kind of near the lights.
Yeah. I put my floater bait furthest.
Oh, you do?
Furthest away. Because sometimes I think, and this is just my theory, and I don't have anything that...
Yeah, you can't talk to a swordfish.
You can't talk to the fish and ask them, like, why'd you eat the floater bait? But my theory is that they're sometimes will patrol kind of like the outskirts of the lights, right? So if you've got some deck lights on, it illuminates the surface of the water for some distance.
Yeah.
Way more than you can probably see. Like you think it only goes, 100 feet.
Yeah.
To a fish, it's probably like 300, 400 feet. Who knows?
Mm.
You know, like.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to put my floater bait where I think that the light is kind of like dropping off.
Yeah.
Like kind of the outskirt of the lights from the boat. And my theory is that the bait and the fish are kind of patrolling some of that perimeter. Like that, you know, it's not, there is sometimes where we've seen swordfish come zipping through the lights, like right up to the boat. But, I wouldn't say that's common.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've had that happen a few times with like tiny swordfish, but it almost seems like it happens more like checking a bait and they like fall all of a sudden they follow your bait in and you're like, oh shit. You know, it seems like they almost never want to eat it. We've gotten a couple though, like, you know, eat it right next to the boat. But have you seen that too?
Yeah, I've seen that. I've never watched one eat it next to the boat.
Yeah.
But I've definitely had ones that have followed it in. You know, you're checking your bait. You basically, like, I've had ones where pulling in the, like one of the floats on one of the middle baits and you get the float off and then it bites. So it's like That's sick. Followed it all the way towards the boat. The bait's still down 175 feet. And then it bites like right below the boat type of thing.
It bites on the paws when you're taking the float off.
Yeah. Yeah.
To go back to your far float. So you're saying 100 feet, I'm assuming depending on current and your drift and all that, but like you're running a floater, no weight at 100 feet, just fathoming out to the floater, or are you putting?
Oh no, my bait from my float on my floater bait is probably only about like 40 feet.
Gotcha.
Right on the surface.
Yeah. So that squid's kind of in that top 30 feet.
You get a lot of tuna bites on that bait too?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, most of the tuna bites will be on that one.
Yeah.
We've caught big eyes on it. They don't give a shit about the
That's what makes me think of the kite. On. Like you can almost fish a kite at night too.
That's why that back the Ali backpack flying fish I think would crush at night.
Yeah.
I don't know if you
talked about this like almost every.
I don't care
because we're fired up about it.
I want to catch one on it.
Yeah.
Next canyon trip, I'm trying to catch one on that.
Basically, a stick flying fish, and they take a little strip of pipe insulation and they stitch it to the back.
Gotcha.
And then they basically
pin the wings out.
Yep. Yep.
And the pipe insulation just keeps them on the surface. Their back is out of the water, and it's just a open wing profile.
Hook through both lips.
Gotcha.
And stitched.
Oh, that's fire.
Yeah.
Fire bait.
Telling you.
Yeah.
No, and they don't even use balloons. They do use balloons sometimes.
They just like send that out on the flat line far, and then they run the kite on the
Keeps
other side.
Keeps your line perfectly straight, too.
If you fish that fucking far and then ran your sword spread or tuna spread, like, inside of that.
All right. I got something for little Johnny to do it.
Yeah.
He's the young kid that fishes on the boat with the family and of the boat that I'm running. And, he's always looking for something to do at night.
Yeah.
Catch him. And I try and get him to catch the squids. Now I'm going to be like, You're on lookout for any flying fish. Yeah,
dip a big flyer, put that thing out there like awesome. That. I think it would annihilate.
So, I rigged one up once for behind a golf ball, behind a sea star, and we caught a blue marlin on it.
That's pretty fucking sick.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I've caught tunas on them rigged up, kind of like a ballyhoo, but yeah. never caught a billfish. That's sick.
Yeah.
The going back to kind of your depth, are you kind of sticking to like deepest, closest to the boat and staggering them out? Or are you doing deep, like shallow, deep, and then very shallow?
Yeah, I do deepest, closest to the boat. I think the basic reason is I think it's the easiest way to
check baits
and manage your baits. And again, coming back to the number of times that I've seen fish in the lights is so small. Mm-hmm. That I don't think that there's a reason to have your baits like up high close to the boat. Yeah. I know it's a little bit counterintuitive if you're throwing some chunks in the water, but I think these fish at night with the lights, that, I mean, we're using lights on our rigs anyway.
Yeah.
They're going to find your bait. They're like, I don't think it matters as much.
Yeah.
So I go for the ease of having my floater farther away and kind of staggering and getting deeper closer.
I think they're timid too.
They're prey at the end of the day.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, they see this weird
commercial. They see lights. Thing. Usually sharks are around commercial boats and stuff. Like
they're going further away, the closer they get.
Yeah, so exactly.
Yeah. They're going down.
Yeah.
Or around.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, as far as like your lights and stuff, you know, we just had a question at one of our talks about like light colors and stuff.
How much light?
Yeah,
like boat light, not like diamond lights and all that.
Brian stuff. And I both like green lights. Do you think it matters? Do you think all that stuff?
Yeah, it's funny because somebody asked me this at Damon's show the other day, and I don't think it matters one bit. And I think that, and I'm curious why you guys like the green one.
Yeah.
What I've seen in the past is people that have a preference for like a green light or a blue light.
Right.
Is they caught a fish while the lights were on and the lights were green.
Yes.
And they said, okay, I'm going to have my lights be green now because we caught a fish. And then they only fish with the lights are green.
Yeah.
And then when every other fish that they catch is, oh, it's because the lights were green.
Yeah.
All right. And then it's like, well, what happens if your lights were blue? And we just don't have enough data points. Like, even the guy, like the most people that are fishing, like, you know, it's maybe a couple dozen trips in the Northeast, right?
You don't have enough data to prove it.
Right. And you're just going to do with what worked.
Yeah.
Right. And so I don't think it matters. That's my personal opinion. I wouldn't put my red lights on just because of the way that red light penetrates through. Water, it loses its illuminance fastest, right. Whatever, but
yeah, it disappears the first in the water column, that color.
Yeah. But blue, green, white, I don't think it matters.
Are you like everything we have, turn it on?
Or no.
No.
I usually run the underwater lights and my deck lights. And then on this new Viking, I've got controls for some of the spreaders and some of the other ones. Like I can control which spreaders are on. And, so I'll have like just one on.
Yeah.
I won't have it like fully.
So you're not blowing night vision out.
You
can still see like your floats on the Aurora, the underwater lights, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And sometimes I'll even turn off the spreader, like all the spreaders completely.
Yeah.
And just run the deck lights. It's quite common that I'll do that. But I don't kind of light up the night.
Yeah.
I don't put on like the mega Durabrights and illuminate everything.
I think there's times for it. I think like Fishtails Bite, when there was so many tunas and they were all horned up on that massive pile of bait, and like anything you threw in the water, I feel like it was an attractant to the bait source.
Yeah.
And there was just such a big herd that their like prey mentality was kind of eliminated. And then when you're in like a Eastern Canyons, it's quiet. Like I think less light's better.
Yeah.
It's funny, like getting bait sometimes almost seems like could go one of two ways. Like a lot of light is the only way to get your squids to the boat. And then sometimes it's like, you don't want too much light because they're only going to the edge of the light.
Exactly.
You know, so like less light, you like, that's the only way to scoop them or whatever. So I've seen, it's weird.
And
every
again,
day is so different. Every day is different, you know?
And that's, that point there is kind of what I was getting at with the floater too, right? If you got so much light, then that perimeter of that light is further away from the boat. And it's possible that not only the bait's out that way, but the fish are out.
Like
you're attracting the fish, but they're not getting close enough to bite your baits.
Interesting. Yeah.
This episode is also brought to you by LT Marine Products. Since 2011, LT Marine has been designing and developing innovative, unique, and high-quality American-made sport fishing equipment. Taylor and I have known the crew at LT since they started. Chris is a great guy. We've been using every single piece of equipment that he's made over the last several years. His rod holders are extremely heavy duty and high quality. He has the machining equipment to be able to put your boat name on the face plates and do other custom work as well, which is pretty cool. And recently, over the last couple of years, we've worked with him to develop some new products that have actually been very popular amongst the Northeast Northeast fishermen, specifically offshore and tuna fishermen. So two of those products have been his swim hook for if you're harvesting a big giant tuna. You know, you want to take care of that fish as best you can prior to bringing him on board. And part of that process is after the fight, swimming the fish, you know, for a certain amount of time, kind of depending on the health of the fish and how the fight went, but usually ends up being around an hour to get all the lactic acid out of the muscles and give a better product at the end of the day when we sell our fish. So we helped him design an affordable swim hook to be able to tow the fish behind the boat at a low speed and accomplish that goal. So, that was a pretty cool product that we collaborated on. And another one is the new LT Marine release hook. We've been doing a lot of release fishing for giants over the last couple of years with the way that the quota has been open and closed. So we've really had a need for a way to properly revive these fish and get them back into good health upon release. So if you go on the LT Marine website, you can see the release hook there. You can also go on our Instagram, Facebook and see how we have it rigged, but it's a tool that we've implemented into our process aboard our boats and it makes releasing fish a lot safer for the crew, a lot better for the fish, and it's a really high quality product. We used it all season, never had a problem, never broke it. So definitely check out that new release hook from LT. Or if you want to see any of Chris's products, visit ltmarineproducts.com. Please make sure you use the promo code CBROS for 10% off your next order. Do you chum when you swordfish a lot? Or only when you have like a mixed spread trying to catch both?
No, we will sometimes when we're sword fishing. It's you know, usually we'll bring a couple of flats with us. We're not like shoveling butterfish into the water, but we'll have
a little trickle.
And we've caught in a handful of swordfish that are just chock full with chunks.
Oh, cool.
So I know that they're eating them.
Yeah.
I don't think that you need to chunk and be chumming to catch them, but I think that they're like they're scavengers, right? They're like a mako shark with a bill.
Yeah.
And so if you got some chunks going, and they'll definitely get in your chunk line.
What do you? Everybody likes the technical stuff, especially like rigging and all that, and. What do you like to do with like your lights and weights and all that type of stuff. And you may or may not want to, like, you know, divulge all your information, but like, what's some tips and stuff with rigging, I guess, for nighttime? You know, we usually do shorter leaders. You know, you may do like a bigger light, obviously, sometimes, but yeah, you know, you may do something different.
No, curious, I mean, see what you say. Pretty simple. So I'm usually just doing my typical, you know, 6 or 7 foot bite leader. So that's the 300 pound mono.
Yep.
And I got a swivel, and then I'll go up about, I do 3 pulls. So 18 feet.
Mm-hmm. So you're like 25 feet from the hook.
Yep. Yeah. And then I'll attach my light, and I zip tie my weight to the light.
Gotcha.
It's pretty simple. Yeah. The LP lights, yep, on the long line clip.
And you're clipping that on a loop, or is that on a wind? That's not on a wind on. It's on your header.
Yeah, it's on my header.
So you're doing just like a loop stop for, yep, the light.
Yep. Yeah. It's, if people have the ability to put in, it kind of depends too on how you're fishing and what you're fishing for, like in terms of tournament versus, yeah, fun fishing, and how much tackle you've got. If you've got the ability to have pre-set up headers with loops for your weight and for your float, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
But most people don't have that, and they're just kind of reusing the same setups that they did for trolling throughout the day. So you can just clip it onto your header and use a rubber band to kind of like lock the long line clip from sliding.
Yeah.
And I'll usually use a piece of chafe tube, just like a 3-inch section that I'll slide up the line and put the long line clip on the chafe tube. So, yep, it doesn't crimp and deform the line quite as much.
Yep. It's a good tip.
That is a good tip.
But yeah, that's what I do. It's pretty simple. It's like that way. I mean, during the daytime stuff, we use the little lights because they've got less drag, and rubber band them on so that they get to the tip and it just pops the rubber band and slides down to the swivel. But you still have to take a weight off. You still have a weight with a long line clip that you're taking off unless you're using the breakaway weights.
Yep.
And even if you're using the breakaway weights, you're still having a weight that you're unclipping. So what I'm getting at is, like, no matter what, you got to take a weight off.
Yeah.
Right. So having that weight and the light all in one for me is nice. It's just, you got one scoop and boom, you've got the weight and the light right off.
Hmm.
And then from there, I just, you know, measure it out to where I want my float to be.
And you're doing the noodle candlestick floats, or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I love those things.
You're doing that on your far float too, like your high bait, or are you putting a balloon on that?
Yeah, so that one I'll mix it up. If I've got white balloons, I might just use a white balloon. The float's kind of doesn't do its purpose, yeah, on the floater.
There's no tension
to keep it straight up and down, right?
Yeah.
So you can put the, but sometimes we'll just put the pool noodle out there. We know it's going to be like, you know, we say it, everybody on the boat, okay, that one we want to be lopped over. If that one's standing up straight,
yeah,
something weird's going on.
Yeah.
So I don't think it really matters.
Yeah.
Just something that you can see, because you're going to send that one the farthest.
Yep.
Something that you can shove a couple of glow sticks in and be able to see where it's at.
Yeah, I know some guys are using like reflective tape now too, like just literally putting some of that tape on the balloon, and then when they want to like look at it, they just shine a light and reflects back.
Smart.
Yeah, smart.
You know, that's interesting. The floater thing's cool. You know, makes total sense. I think people, when they think of swordfish, they think deep, but at night, I mean, they're coming up to feed, so it makes total sense. You know, and there's always a handful every year caught trolling at night too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like if they're coming up to eat on the troll, they're going to eat a 40 foot floater.
Yeah. And I think about my floater as also my tuna bait too.
Yeah.
It's like,
you drop down a leader at all?
I don't. Nope. No. And
I don't think they give a shit.
Dumb creatures, dude.
Even giant bluefins at nighttime, I feel like they just eat. Like if they're hungry, they're going to eat anything.
Yeah.
You know, 220, 300, doesn't really matter all that much.
Yeah.
I think if they were in the chunks, like, behind the boat, that maybe it matters a little bit more. But if they're, like, just scavenging out in the perimeter of the light, I don't think it matters as much.
Yeah.
If I, you know, if sometimes you get the yellowfins fired up behind the boat at night in the chunks or whatever, and I think maybe sometimes there, if you threw in the 300 pound, you're going to get more bites on the 80 or 100 pound. But yeah, I think generally speaking, your floater, it's going to get eaten or it's not.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it too is just the presentation, like not necessarily how well they can see, but just, you know, you got all that memory in 300 pound. Your trunk's probably going down, spinning and doing weird shit. It's like not naturally floating, you know, much heavier too.
Yeah.
But when you start getting into, say, you have a sword spread out and you start seeing tunas showing up and stuff, like what kind of changes do you like to make? You know, do you drop stuff out?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of depends on what the boss wants to catch.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Right?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's times where we'll like, maybe we'll take out the tip rod and the next deepest rod, and we'll jig, or we'll pay out a couple of baits with the chunks. I think those are the two options that we do the most. Catching them on the jig is pretty fun. We did that a few times this past season. We caught a handful of big eyes on the jig, which was...
That's cool.
It was fun.
Conventional or spinning?
We did both.
Oh, gross.
Yeah.
How's the spinning rod?
It was tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I put the little kid on it. So we were jigging with some of the conventional stuff, and I came down. We hadn't gotten a bite in a little bit. And I was like, all right, let me grab the spinning rod and see if I can get a bite. And like,
instant.
I hooked up like on my first drop of the jig. And I was like, all right, here you go. I'm going to go back up top. And he just looked at me and he was like, you could tell that he was just mad. He's
like, why did you do that? Why did you just do that to me?
He was like happy, but also like, really?
Yeah.
You couldn't have done it on the rod that like I could strap myself in on.
It's like they know.
Yeah. It'll keep you awake though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like having a canyon spread out and you have 120 or 30 like in the mix of all your 50s and 80s. You know, like the big fish knows.
Oh yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
So funny.
What about bite drag at night? So you're set your spread, where are your reels at as far as bite drag? Kind of how are you approaching a bite at night versus a bite during the daytime?
Yeah, generally my drags are light at night. I keep them pretty light. Mostly like just enough that the line's not going to come off the reel on its own.
Yeah.
A little bit more than that, just so, you know, if it goes off, it's not going to bird's nest or whatever. But and then when we get the bite at night, it tends to be, especially on the float bait, like on any of your baits that are on a float as opposed to the tip rod, you're going to either see the buoy lop over, and generally speaking, that fish is hooked already. Like it's swallowed the bait.
Yeah.
Right. It's inhaled it. Maybe the hook hasn't set yet, but the bait's in its gullet. Or it's just going to take off screaming, or it's just going to be one of those like kind of taps that just pulls out a little bit of drag and then it'll come back, take out a little bit more drag. And on those ones, we just kind of wait. Sometimes we'll kind of reel a little bit. But there's not, because of the fact that you've got potentially 175 or 200 feet between the float and the weight, and then another 25 feet to the bait. When you're reeling it in, it's not really like moving the bait in the same manner that it is if you're on a tip rod.
Basically like pulling the fold out before you come tight.
Yeah, you're and so I don't think it does a lot to like tease the fish or entice the fish to like kind of move the bait around on the float rods. So if we're going to move the bait, we're going to bring it like almost all the way to the boat. So that we'd get the float off. But usually they're more committal. Yeah, double fisting. Usually they're more committal at night, in my experience anyway. the tip rod, sometimes they'll whack at it a few times, and then we'll play that one the same way as with it's the daytime fishery. Like, and you see a bite on the tip rod, and we'll drop it down usually, and then try and, you know, get them to swallow it.
Makes sense.
And then we'll fight it, you know, start at fighting it with like 15 pounds of drag and kind of adjust accordingly. It's really just understanding what the rod, like what the fish is doing, and then playing the rod. Yeah. Stand up stuff at night, it's almost a little bit easier because you can kind of use the rod and kind of work the fish with the leverage of the rod a little bit differently than if it's just straight up and down in the rod holder.
Yeah. You can adjust your angle.
Yeah.
Now, as far as like nighttime fights and stuff, kind of like walk us through like a typical fish and then some of like maybe some of your extreme nighttime battles.
There's no such thing as a typical fish in sword fishing.
Always different.
Yeah, they're always different. They're like, the only thing that's typical about them is that they'll tend to, like, when they get close to the boat, they'll always want to go to the wheels. Like, they'll put their like head down, ass up type of thing. Like, their builds, they'll try and get their build like almost like chopped off in the wheels, and you just see their tail kind of kicking up. That's quite common. But in terms of the fight at night, you get sometimes where you get a fish and you get it to the boat in 2 minutes, like, cause it never realizes that it's hooked, and you get a shot at it like right off the rip. If you
similar
don't
to sharks,
it,
I feel like they're so close to a shark.
Yeah.
Like you said, you know, like you get some of these jumbo sharks, you know, you hook and they're like right next to the chum bucket type of thing. And you're like, you know, run.
Yeah.
You know, and then if you wait a little bit longer, they'll wake up.
Right.
Yeah. So you get the same thing.
Yeah, same thing. Like, we had, this is a pretty funny one. We had one year where we got caught sleeping. We weren't paying attention. There was Floyd Moneymaker Mayweather was had a fight that night and got the pay-per-view on the boat. We're watching the fight. Yeah, and we look back, and we noticed it because the tip rod was bouncing, and we're like, "Oh, we're getting bite!" And we look, and one of the float rods, the fish had eaten the bait, swam all the way to the boat, never took any drag. Mm-hmm. And if we were paying attention, we would have seen the float
move.
Yeah, so the fish swam towards the boat, wrapped itself around a couple times on the tip rod, and just kind of hung out and basically died. Like we reeled it in. It was like a 49 inch fish or whatever. It was like, you know, your cookie cutter nighttime fish. And like, well, that was easy. But it did. It just swam to the boat. Like, it never pulled any drag out. It just kind of swam over. And I mean, could have been on there for 25 minutes, could have been on there for 5 minutes, and we just reeled it up, put the gaff in it. That was it.
That's amazing.
But then you get some that are just angry, and yeah, they'll kind of recognize that they're hooked and they'll go off and go crazy. Had one once, but right off the bat, like ate a down bait. Float was the closest float to the boat, down maybe 175 feet, and the thing the float lopped over, fish skyrocketed to the boat, skyrocketed up, jumped, went right down, popped them off. But
it's crazy how they can do that. Almost every freaking swordfish bite I've had at night is like, oh, the light's at the surface, and then it's like, it all happens so fast, like lopped over, then the lights up near the surface.
Yeah.
They're quick.
It's fucking crazy.
Well, I think a lot of it is if you're using any bit of lead, you know, you're using 2 or 3 pounds of lead, the first thing that they're going to feel is if they just eat the bait, like, right, if you think about the swordfish down there, like, and that squid's not really moving that much, right? Because we're drifting maybe a half a knot.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're coming in at a bait that's being trolled at 8 knots and have to be all fired up and kind of attack it a bunch. They're just coming in and like just eat it.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of milling around while they're eating. And then all of a sudden they feel some pressure against that lead. They're just going to swim against the lead. And the lead's got gravity going down. So they're swimming up against that lead. So I think that's why you see the light come up a lot of the time. It's because they're just, the first thing that they feel is the lead. They're swimming against that lead initially. And then of course you bump up your drag and start fighting the fish and then they feel you.
Yeah.
Right. And then, so then you're fighting against the pull towards the boat.
Yeah.
But initially I think they're just feeling that lead. Swimming up against that.
They're crazy fish. So unpredictable, like you've said multiple times. Like one is never the same as the next.
Yeah, never.
It's crazy.
Have you ever fought one for a long, long time that you knew was a swordfish and just never saw it? You never, you know, like have you had any of those 3-5 hour night battles that you hear about? And some people think they're all manta rays, but or they almost all been like that smaller category fish.
Yeah, I've never had one that I was confident was a swordfish that we fought for hours at night and then lost. I feel like we've had that with manta rays.
Yeah.
But I've never had that with a swordfish, or at least one that I would confidently say is a swordfish.
At night. But at night. Daytime, I'm sure you
have. Oh, yeah, yeah. But and we've fought some during the day into the night and landed them at night.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never hooked one at night and said, oh, yeah, that's going to be the 500-pounder. I've never caught a monster at night. All of the 300-plus pounders that we've caught has been during the day.
And what is the – I mean, I know a little bit of the theory, but, like, what is the – what do people think? The big ones just never leave the bottom?
You know, I don't know if that it's possible. It's possible too that they leave the bottom, but they're not coming up as high.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're kind of hanging out between 250 and 500 feet, and I don't know. I don't really have a good working theory for that one yet, but it is factual that most of the fish caught at night are sub 300.
Yeah.
Most of the 300 plus pound fish that come up in the Northeast are daytime fish.
But then they come up during the day and just hang out on the surface sometimes. Like,
yeah,
it just doesn't make sense.
Everybody's got to poop, man.
It's wild.
Their behavior must just flip a switch once they're like mature,
yeah,
you know, or big. You know? Has to. Like, tunas are the same. Like, bluefins are the same. Like, a 60-incher to an 80-incher is going to act and feed and usually be in different spots and stuff in comparison to, like, a 100-incher.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're wondering if are they targeting... I mean, they're not really targeting that much different bait, you know? Or are they just lazier and they don't want to go up as far, or maybe there's something to do with like equalizing that they don't do as well as a small fish, or who knows?
Yeah, I really don't. I don't have a good working theory for that one yet.
Huh.
What's one of the aside from nighttime fishing? What's one of the craziest, coolest things you've seen at night? Just being out there.
I mean, I think it's always amazing to me when you get like a raft of squid that gets pushed up against the boat.
Mm.
And so we've seen that a few times where like either porpoise or tunas push the squid against the boat and they're like thick enough that you feel like you go walk on them. That's so pretty cool. You just like you dip a net down and you just completely fill the net.
Yeah.
That's wild. I've never seen that.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. And then you put them on. Send them out. Actually, there was one time where it was so thick and the fishing actually wasn't that good. And I don't know if it was just because there was so much squid that they were like completely fed and like they weren't really eating that much. I don't know what that was about. But then there's other times you put that live squid out and send it out away from the boat from where they're like kind of congregated, and it's like game
on. Smoked.
Yeah.
What are you doing differently? Like if you're, you know, dead squid, your eight baits prepped, you got your spread out, then all of a sudden you get this raft of squid, or you got a, you know, plentiful supply of live squids. Are you going down in hook size? Are you going down in leader size? Or are you just literally taking the dead bait off and slapping it on a mustad and sticking it out?
Yeah. I've messed around and tried a few different things. Tried it with, like putting out like a Super Mutu and trying different hooks and different ways of doing it. And I'm not convinced, but I think that your hookup ratio is higher on the dead baits than the live baits.
For swords.
Yeah. For swords. There's no good way to hook the squid that enables it to stay alive and move around good. And you can kind of feel confident that if a swordfish comes and whacks at it, that it's not off the hook.
Yeah.
Right. So we see a lot of times where we put out the live squid, put it out on the floater, and we're like, oh, we just had a bite. And then it's like, that was it.
Yeah.
It just comes and whacks it and rips it right off the hook.
Yeah.
Because I think that when you have that live bait, and it's moving around that much more, yeah, maybe it's going to entice the fish a little bit more to eat. But the fish is going to respond to it in a different way than it will for a dead bait that's kind of more right. Gingerly kind of floating
along.
They're
going to try to kill it first, probably.
Yeah, exactly. And again, I've never asked a swordfish if that's the case, but that's kind of like...
We like to pretend we're a swordfish.
The data points that I've collected and like the way that I think about them, that's kind of the way that I'm picturing them out there. Is
but you're out
fired up behind a live squid much more than the dead squid.
Totally. And you're out there enough doing it. It's like your data points are, in my eyes, more valuable than just doing like indiscriminate research on them.
Yeah.
You know? You got the experience. You've seen the different bites. You've seen the different situations. I think it makes sense. It's all theory anyway. That's what Weber says. It's all theory.
Yeah.
It's all theory. You'll never figure it out.
Yeah.
That's cool.
We saw whale sharks this past year. That was pretty cool.
I've never seen one. I don't think I've seen one at all.
A whale shark?
Yeah.
I haven't either.
I hadn't seen one in a few years, and then we saw a couple this past season. We hooked a blue marlin right next to it. We hooked a couple of tunas. We made a pass by the whale sharks. You know, like the tunas were hanging out by the whale sharks.
That's cool.
And then made another pass around and hooked a blue marlin. It's like, okay, everything was hanging by the whale sharks.
That's nuts.
It was pretty cool.
That's so cool.
There's a few of them out there this past season.
I haven't seen a whale shark. Saw a sperm whale out there. That was cool.
Yeah. That's wild. What's your biggest heartbreak story in the canyons?
Heartbreak story.
Fish that you lost or maybe just epic like so the catch story too.
The biggest heartbreak was I think everybody's got their one fish that got away and they claim it was like the monster and
right.
Whatever. I had that. We were actually pre-fishing for Damon's tournament one year, trying to scope out a couple of spots for sword fishing. One of the tricky parts about the sword fishing during the day is like finding the right bottom. And like, if you know where the water is going to be, you want to fish where the water is and where the bait is, but not all bottom is the same, right? And so you want to find some area that's holding the swordfish where the water is. So we went out a few days before the tournament and we're like, okay, this is where the water is. Let's find some bottom. And we found some bottom and we were fishing. We caught one pretty much right off the bat. And it was like in the 250 range.
Yep.
And it was a good fish.
Yeah.
And so we set back out. And we hook another one, and like this one, it started off like we loaded up like the rod, just like when we hooked it, we hook it with quite a bit of drag. We hit them with a bunch of drag to like make sure that the hook finds a good place. and you could tell that the fish wasn't budging right off the bat. Like it was like staying down on the bottom, and then it turned and it just came up and like basically shot up to the surface. And we had probably still like 1800 feet of line out, 1800 revolutions on the LP, and the thing jumped, and we all just looked at each other and we're like, holy shit. Like that thing was so far away, and it, and the fish that we had just killed had jumped a few times beside, like close to the boat, relatively close to the boat. And the one that jumped further away looked bigger jumping 1800 feet away from the boat than the 250 pounder looked like 100 feet from the boat. And we're like, holy shit, that's our 500 pounder. And we pulled the hook after maybe a half an hour on that one.
That sucks.
Really? I was trying to convince myself, it's okay, it's okay. He's going to be there in a couple of days for the tournament.
Yeah.
He wasn't there for the tournament, but
I'm going to go poop. Maybe we'll hook him again.
Yeah. Yeah, that one was like, that was the biggest fish that we've hooked. Had that one, and then actually fished in the Dominican Republic. We went down there and was doing a couple of days of fad fishing for the Blue Marlins, and then did a couple of days of sword fishing, and we caught a few swordfish down there. It's awesome sword, daytime sword fishing down there. And we hooked one, and we fought it for a couple hours right into the evening, and broke the braid, broke the main line about 30 feet from the weight. So I was like 30 feet away from getting the lead off and getting the wind on onto the reel, and ping. I think there was like a little piece of plastic that floated by, or there was a nick in the braid. That was a heartbreak.
That's
because that one, we were on that fish for a few hours, like 3 hours, and you could just tell that was, it was a real fish.
There's some slobs there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your heartbreak?
My biggest heartbreak to like fish? Not like fighting a fish, but that OBBC tournament with where we were in first place, like all the way to the last freaking 10 minutes. And that daytime trolled swordfish came in.
Oh, yeah.
Was it like 600 pounds or something?
Ridiculous. Five something, 570 or something.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
And, you know, the way the points work there, if he didn't catch that, we were smoking him. But that the way the points were, I think it's what, 2 points per pound for a daytime fish or something. Mm. And they saw a 500 plus pound daytime sword like milling basically on the surface, and they trolled by it and got, and they fought it for 5 hours with one guy stand up and caught it. They brought in the last 10 minutes.
It was Tucker.
Yeah, Tucker.
It couldn't have happened to a better person though.
Yeah. I mean, his side, it's amazing. My side, it sucks.
Yeah, because you got like a boat full of eyes. Would you have a blue, a couple whites?
We were definitely like doing really well. And that sucked. So I don't know what money-wise, it went from 70 or 80 grand or something down to like 15 or so. Which, money aside, it was heartbreaking. The whole time we were like, we knew for like several hours that he's coming in with this big daytime sword, big swordfish.
And we're
like, you know, there's no way it's 500 pounds trolled it during the day. Then I'm like, well, it's Tucker. I mean, he's seen enough fish. He knows roughly how big this fish is.
And people do overestimate the size of the sword.
Always.
It's like, oh, yeah, I caught one that was 200 pounds. It's like, it might look like 200 pounds, but it was probably buck 20.
Kind of like sharks. Yeah. You know, like you think a shark's so big, but then you weigh it and you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
You know, it really doesn't weigh that much.
We had a heartbreak, not this past season, the season before, in the Nantucket tournament, the big game battle.
Mm. I love that tournament.
Yeah, we were fishing that one, and we had like our whole strategy lined out. We were like, all right, we're going to do our big eyes and our billfish and our swordfish. And we were doing great. And little Tyler Dufresne, running the No Mercy, like I was chatting, like I knew what he had caught, and he was beating us by one swordfish going in like the last morning. And it was pretty funny. So I was like, okay, I catch my two swordfish and we're going to be in really good shape. And on our last
Just two.
No
big deal. I love it. That's how you know you're
fucking dialed in on swordfish. That's how you know you're fucking dialed in on swordfish. Like, we'll get our two and then we can go on another species.
So it's like, you know, we got an hour and a half left to fish before we need to be steaming back. So I'm like, all right, guys, we're going to do one more drift. We're going to fish our two rods on the bottom. We're going to catch them. Let's do it. And everybody's just like fired up. And then you got little Johnny. He's like, all right, let's go. And sure as shit, 15 minutes into the drift, we hooked one on the tip rod. And I was like, yeah, that's him. Let's start fighting that fish. And we look out in the buoy rod, and the buoy's sucked under. So we're like, this is it. We just doubled up. Let's go. So we doubled up, and we get the first fish in, kill that fish, and get to work on the second fish. And we had a first happen to me, and we got the second fish of the boat, and it was a freaking ray. I never have gotten a ray during the daytime, and it was a ray. Oh my God. So here I was thinking, we just killed the swordfish. They're like, we went over the spot on the bottom.
Yeah.
And we're like pumped up. We get, you know, you get the weight off, you get the leader up, and I'm like, no fucking way is that a ray. Like, oh, that was a kick. That was a kick in the shins for sure.
That sucks.
But
oh, that sounds horrible.
Yeah. What about you, Brad? You lose a heartbreaker? You guys must lose some heartbreakers every season. Yeah.
I feel like the giant tuna ones kind of just start being the same.
Yeah.
It's either like a hook pull or they're acting weird, coughing a lot, and you chafe them off.
Like, I had one.
Not usually like a mistake on our part nowadays, just because we've.
And they're pretty predictable in comparison. Yeah. You don't have as much line out and all that. Like, there's, you know, the variables are different, but I had one that we caught 2 years ago that I really, really wish we could have killed. It was the day before. I think it was like the day before opening season, like the next section of quota.
Yeah.
And it was like a 4.5 hour fight with a kid from Texas that had never been on the ocean before. And
those are the best, by the way.
Oh,
you get somebody that's never been fishing before.
Oh, you're gonna get a thousand.
You're gonna get a bite,
yeah. Dude. It was the biggest tuna that I've ever like had next to the boat in our waters. Like, I've seen really big ones in Canada and stuff, and this thing was like right there.
This was like a Canada size.
It was fucking huge. It took us 8.5 miles in a straight line, like eight straight line. We actually hooked him twice. He sucked the herring out of my hands, putting the first float out, like on the machine, sucked the floater down, came up, you know, tried to come tight, nothing happened. Then I pinned another herring on. He was back on the screen again. Like one of those marks that's just like continuously on the screen, just like this monster spaghetti mark. And then we were on him again. It was like 8.5 miles, 4-something hours. We got him, and he was like, that fish is big. Like, that fish was like, you know, just over 1,000. I would say he was 200 pounds bigger than that.
That's awesome.
He was fucking huge. And we had to let him go. So that was a heartbreak. He was very healthy. Like, you know, we praise heavy drag and quick fights, and it doesn't always happen, as you know, all the time, like on release days. But this thing was like, we swam him for half hour, 40 minutes. He was absolutely perfect. Black back, like pinned in the corner of the mouth. No fins were fucked up. Like, it felt good letting him go, but at the same time, it was like
some of those released fish.
His tail was huge. His tail was like the size of that blue marlin mount that you have. Yeah. It was huge. It was like, it had to have been close to 40 inches across.
That's wild.
Yeah. And so that one that wasn't like a crazy fight, actually hooked on a squid on the corner. We just like, it was, this was probably like 5 years ago. I was with Pritch on Widgeon.
Oh yeah.
And,
that's a heartbreaker one.
That one sucked a lot. We were just on this unbelievable pile of bait. Like, I've never had a tank of bait like that ever on the bank in the morning. Like, it's always been good, but I had jumbo herring, nice squids, mackerels, whiting. It was just like, we're on a mecca pile of bait. Fish ate the squid, went off the bank to the west. We chased them down forward, saw the whole sickle tail deal, like, you know, 110 incher up high. And then he just kind of quit pretty easy. And we fucking lost them because we had the leader in the rod three times. We didn't have, this was like right when Winthrop was pivoting to the whole like Excalibur guides and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they offered like the small tip in an aluminum frame and titanium, whatever. The fucking swivel got caught in the tip on the way out on one pinwheel, like literally a dart shot away, and fucking popped him off right at the swivel on the leader, like 20 feet away. That fish was probably like 900 pounds.
Yeah, that whole week was slobs. Like, a small one there was 700.
Yeah. That one just sucked because it was just like, still, you said, like a braid, stupid failure. It's just like, oh, he's right there. One more turn, you can see the hook just like smashed in the corner of his mouth. You know, he's not like varying on his pinwheels. Like, he's just like perfect fucking ready to be taken. That one hurt.
You get him so freaking close.
Yeah, but it happens, part of it. Yeah, you know?
I feel like those...
Makes you better.
Oh, definitely.
I feel like you just kind of start dulling over time to those moments.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, there's always like there's a tournament moment and stuff. That part sucks. But like the losing of the fish moment, you just over time starts dulling.
Totally.
And like the hooking part too, like hooking a big fish starts, not the excitement, because you still feel the same excitement, but it's like the frantic, it's the freak out moment of like, oh shit, you know, we finally got our chance. Let's screw it up by reeling a rod over another rod or whatever.
Yeah.
All that kind of goes away.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you see it with sword fishing. You know, I'm sure you kind of now over time that you have decreased your panic moment.
Yeah, the pandemonium, like the kind of the chaos that goes around it is like certainly decreased. But that high that you feel when you get that bite, that's why we do it.
Yeah. You just know how to control it now.
Yeah, exactly.
If I could harness the high of like, when you get a bite, whether it's bluefin fishing or swordfish fishing or whatever, and sell that, I mean, that's like...
Even hunting. I just started hunting this year, like hunting anything.
Yeah.
And I got into bow hunting whitetails this year. My first sit, legitimately my first time ever sitting in a tree stand with a fucking bow. I had 4 or 5 does come through and I'm like, I've never felt that, like, no, you're not able to even like physically move your body in ways that you have before. Like tunas, like you've done it so many times. And even like early days, I'd never felt that way, but like can't even stand up.
Yeah.
Well, I literally couldn't even fucking stand up. And ended up being an amazing experience. And like, but just like, if you could.
He killed a buck in like the first 45 minutes sitting in a tree stand, a 10 pointer.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
It was unbelievable. Does came through. He was right behind him. It was early season. I like didn't know fuck all. Like, I've been talking to like amazing people and they all know who they are. But like, you know, you get a little smidge of info here and here and here. And you're like, it's first time ever situationally being like with deer. Like when I'm not just looking at him in my fucking yard.
Yeah.
And I called and he literally just hit his scrape and came right to the call, and I smoked him at like 17 yards.
That's
awesome. And I was just like, this is like, if you could bottle that fucking feeling, it's the same as tuna fishing, sword fishing, any big game fishing or hunting. It's pretty unbelievable for sure.
Sick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The hunting thing is, that's a whole nother game too. It's a different feeling. My brothers hunt a lot. They live down in Westport, Mass. And there's a lot of land down there, and they do quite a bit of hunting. I'll go down there sometimes and hunt. I don't get to do it as much, and when I do it, they give me strict instructions like, don't kill this one. Do not kill this one. Yeah. That one is mine, and that one over there that you might be tempted to kill, that one's living another 2 years, so that can be mine.
Yeah. That was the whole thing. Like, that was a huge learning curve for me. Like, I have buddies that are of the mindset, like, take whatever the opportunity is that's given to you right off the rip. And then I have other friends that are like the same, you know, they're watching a buck for 3 years before they decide to actually hunt that deer. So I saw the whole spectrum like super quick. And when I went into it this year, I wanted to just kind of go in. This is going to sound so earthy, crunchy, but like as like organically into it as possible. Like I just wanted to hunt. I didn't look at a fucking single camera, nothing. I literally just played the wind, you know, had an idea of like when I was seeing deer around here and just went and hunted. And then that happened. But now I'm starting to see the, like the appeal of picking one specific animal to hunt. Cause you can't do that fishing. Like you can't just be like, the 1,000-pounder is on this section of the tide and I'm going to set up and try to fucking, you know, it's not going to happen. So that whole aspect for me is like, that's, I have a pretty addictive personality. And that's definitely the appeal for me now is like one specific animal.
Yeah. And I think it's like got a lot of parallels to the fishing stuff because it's not necessarily picking out that particular animal and fishing, but it's, again, it's thinking about, okay, what is that fish going to do? What is that?
Yeah.
What is that deer going to do? Like you got to like really like think about how it's going to act in different circumstances.
Totally. They definitely feed off of each other. Like being in the woods and understanding how animals move or trying to understand how animals move, you know, wind is like current.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's so many crossovers that I feel like if you are fortunate enough to be able to do both, they're just going to benefit each other.
Yeah.
You know,
patterning them out.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, like early season, they're going to be here because that's the feed. And later in the season, they're going to be a little bit different pattern because of the feed. And
yeah, then hunting pressure is going to switch it and they're going to move to different pieces.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy. Hmm. It really is. But, I don't know. I love it.
I only got to sit 3 times this past fall. I had one sit, but I did have one sit where I got 2 in 1 sit.
That's nice. Sick.
That is sick.
Have you had a surf and turf, like gone fishing and then killed a deer?
Oh yeah.
Have you?
Yeah. The fall surf and turf is the best.
I tried during that whole December bite last year. I was doing a sit because it was typically over in the morning and then I'd be able to hunt in the afternoon, but it never happened.
Yeah. I never had same day tuna and deer, like real fresh tuna, or fresh deer.
Yeah.
We've definitely had days where we've done like some tautog fishing in the afternoon after killing a deer in the morning, or vice versa.
That's sick. That's
cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that's a good surf and turf special. Or you know, maybe it's like, especially in the fall when you get some windows to go sword fishing, and you get sword fishing in the cooler for a couple of days, and then you go kill a deer, and it's like
so awesome.
Some deer shimi and some fresh swordfish on the grill. That's living large right there.
Yeah. Your friends love you when you have a week like that, for sure.
Swordfish is delicious.
I would say it's one of my faves.
Yeah, halibut's my favorite.
Yeah.
And wahoo.
Halibut's one of the few fish that I'll actually order at a restaurant.
Same.
I feel like it's got to be like the right restaurant too, though. Yeah. You know, like one known for seafood.
I feel like if it's in season, pretty much every time I've had it in restaurants,
amazing. It's good, yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
What's your favorite fish to eat?
It's probably a tie between swordfish and wahoo's really good.
Yeah.
So good. So versatile.
And we don't get it a lot.
Right.
And so I think that's one of the other appeals. It's like, it's kind of a rarity to have it. So it's like an extra special treat. But man, some wahoo sashimi, that stuff is
so good.
Melts in your mouth.
So good. Opa, I had.
Did you? Where'd you have that?
Hawaii.
Oh, nice.
Unbelievable. Pomfret.
Pomfret
had is that the
really good.
That's amazing. So good.
Yep.
We caught some of those sword fishing before, and that's pretty tasty.
So good. Those things are cool. Really cool fish. I'd love to catch one of those. Either or, opa or a pomfret.
What bycatch ones have you, like fish have you caught up here? I know Florida, there's people get bycatch all the time, but
the weirdest one, we caught a monster hake one time.
Really?
Yeah.
Like how many pounds?
Okay, maybe. So it wasn't dragger monster, but it was like probably 30 pounds.
Holy shit. Dude, what?
Did you
keep it? On the day drop?
Yeah. Wow. It was one of the bigger hakes that I've seen.
That's cool.
That is. And amazing. I spent time on draggers before. And yeah. Like this was one of the bigger.
That's so cool.
That I've seen. It was bizarre. I thought it was going to be like a little tuna or something. It fought a little bit, but not a ton. This way was, and you know, we had probably 8 pounds of lead, and it fought enough to know that there was a fish on, not just like you were tangled.
Yeah.
But that was a weird one. Hmm. That was the only time I've caught that.
That's a strange one.
Yeah, we actually haven't caught any other critters up here.
I caught a sea turtle on the kite once.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Legit hook. Not...
They ate the bait.
For... I don't want to say we like harmed it because we didn't. The thing was... we were fishing 8-0 Jobus with like medium-sized mackerel and it ate the frick... I don't know how he caught it.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, was it alive?
He ate the mackerel and he was just... Not even past the barb. Just the tip right through his little beak. Right in the middle. Just like that. He ate the mackerel. I don't know whether the mackerel like died and he ate it. I mean, I was watching the mackerel. I didn't see the bite. Like, he didn't pop the clip or anything. All of a sudden, it was just like the kites are coming down. We saw like fins like splashing out by the kite bait. And then we reel it in. It's like a manhole cover size sea turtle just hooked right in the tip of the fucking bill. And like, I think it grabbed the leader and looked at him. He just fell right off and swam away. That was the weirdest.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
I hooked one shark fishing long, long time ago. I ate like a dead, I don't know if it was a dead mackerel or whatever it was, but it ate a dead bait. I can't imagine watching a turtle try and catch a mackerel on the kite.
They swim pretty fast. Like, really fast. You know, like you snorkel, scuba dive, like you've seen them move quite well, but to be able to like pivot and like be agile enough to catch a fucking tuna can barely eat a mackerel. You know?
Tuna's always miss the kite, and to have a turtle eat the kite's impressive.
Yeah. Did you see the bite?
I did not. All I saw was just like flippers.
Dude, what if the turtle came out greyhounding like a tuna does, like chasing the bait? Oh, that would have been amazing.
Dad had a halibut eat the kite bait on the southwest corner.
Come on.
Yeah. He was fishing the high ground like... I don't think he was like on the high ground, like 70 feet, but he was like 88 feet of water, 85 feet of water, and had one come up and fucking crush the kite.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you just saw
the stories of him eating sand eels on the surface.
Yeah.
On the bank. I've never seen it.
Have you guys caught one before?
I've caught shorts.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. There's been a few guys that have caught them like on the bottom between like Scituate, Boston, and the bank. There's like a few rock piles and little ledges that guys have got them on, haddock fishing and all that. But
Fippinies,
Tillies.
Yeah.
But I've never like specifically targeted them. PEI, you could, if you targeted them recreationally there, which you can't, it would be one of the best, like, it would be such an awesome moneymaker for those guys and just being able to give versatility in their charters.
Yeah.
They have so many, like 50 to like 80 pounders.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty wild.
I've never caught one on rod and reel, and I'd love to.
I feel like that's like one of those bucket list that's grown up in New England.
A great white I've never caught.
Yeah. Can we take a quick piss break and then return back to stories?
Have I told my seal story on this before? We were just talking about catching weird night, like weird things.
I feel like you may have, like with Dave Good way back, like 3 years ago, when we started.
I haven't heard it.
So
this one's fucking
this
amazing.
This was probably close to 10 years ago now.
It was over 10 years ago.
On our older boat.
Yeah.
We're fishing a tournament.
South Shore Tuna Tournament when it existed.
Right. It was, you could fish at night. No one caught anything at night. We're on the bank. And actually, we went east of the bank a little bit just so we could like throw some chum and stuff at night, see what was going on out there. Cause we fished on the bank all day and like nothing happened out of like 70 boats. And so we were like chumming. We had some sharks and stuff at night. We had some live bluefish and mackerel out. And it was like, I remember Corey was in the back chumming.
I'm going to pause you at Corey chumming. Explain how big the boat is and how many people.
So this is a 32 Holland.
It's a harpoon boat.
I was going to say, that sounds like
it's a canoe. It's like a canoe of a down.
I mean, it had, you know, the little bunks downstairs, but, you know, not comfortable. And then one little, like, basically the captain's chair. And then one little, like, corner seat that basically you could fit two people if you, like, touched ass, but really is for one person.
Yeah.
And that was it. You could sit on the engine box.
And you had, what, like a 4-person charter?
We had a, no, we had a, it was only two guys.
Two guys.
But we had two mates because we were fishing the tournament. So it was me, Corey, Dad, and two guys. So it was five guys on the boat at night. Obviously, no one slept. I think Dad actually slept downstairs a good amount. Corey and I were up pretty much all night. I was on the chair. Corey was chumming. And we were getting bored. So we were like, we were cutting the heads off of everything. Anything we caught. I'm not going to say what we caught. we caught some stuff. We were chumming all those things.
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, the boat was a shit show. Corey, this was maybe, like, midnight to 2 o'clock in the morning, somewhere in that range. Corey starts falling asleep in the chair with a chum ladle and a lit cigarette. And so, he's falling asleep. I want to say he, like, burnt his hand a few times that night with the cigarette just from falling asleep and the thing just burning. Anyways, so I started hearing, like, actually, no, we didn't have the clicker on. That was the deal. I went back to just, like, check what was going on. Like, I was nodding off, watching the radar and stuff. And I went back to, like, check what was going on. And Corey was notorious for not putting the clicker on. Like, we had several bites while he was working with us. Where, like, you'd be, like, hanging out, and all of a sudden, you're like, hey, guys, like, start up. And, you know, he'd be already be fighting a fish for, like, a minute, like a giant tuna for like a minute, and you wouldn't know. He like hated clickers. Anyways, so we didn't have the clicker on at night, which is like the stupidest thing ever. And I go in the back, and I just like put my hand on one of the spools, just like looking at the rods, and I felt the line like coming off the spool because we had like shitty deck lights. Couldn't really even see the tip of the rod very well. And I'm like, fucking line is like coming off. It was coming off fairly slow. I'm like, this is weird. So I put the drag up and the rod just like doubles over. I'm like, dude, we're on. It was a live bluefish. I'm like, we're on. And the thing's like taking some line like fast, you know, not like a blue shark, like fast taking line at like 30 something pounds of drag. And I think it took some line and then stopped and I thought it pulled the hook. So we didn't even have time to like start the boat or anything. So everyone, half the people were still asleep. So it was really just Corey and I witnessing all this. So I'm like reeling. I'm like, you know, maybe he's coming at us. And it was dead slack. Like nothing was there. I'm like, shit. And all of a sudden it just loaded up and started taking line again. It did it like 3 or 4 times. And I'm like, this is like the weird, like, I don't know if he's gut hooked or like, what's going on, right? And this is, it's pitch black. We don't have underwater lights. We had barely any spreader lights.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're trying to make sense.
So I make sense of like what's going on. We're all like half asleep. And if the thing had like 300-400 yards of line out when I went over, it was like half the spool was gone already. So like finally get like kind of close to this thing. And it just like kind of loaded up. And all of a sudden we heard. And like then water. And Corey and I like, I will never forget our faces. Pitch black, couldn't see it. This thing was breathing at night, like quiet night. I put my hands off the reel and I looked at him and he looked at me and we're like, what the fuck was that? Like it breathed like a person would before going back underwater. We had no idea what it was, right? So now like our stomach's in our chest and we're like, what the fuck was that? And it kept doing this weird, like come at the boat thing and then like tension, hard tension. And finally, all of a sudden, like, it just beelined at the boat at the very end, and we saw it swim under the boat, and it broke us off, and the thing was probably, like, one of those 400-pound giant, what are they, the gray seals, the big ones, or the harbor seals?
Harbor seals are small.
Whatever the big ones
are. Like, elephant face-looking seals.
Yeah, the really big, nasty-looking things. And we had another live bluefish still out, like, near the boat, and it actually swam under the boat, broke us off, and went over and ate the other rod, and he stole the bait right off the hook. But dude, like, I'll never forget our eyes were the size of the freaking Yeti container.
Oh yeah,
it was like,
it's breathing.
It's breathing. It's breathing. we didn't even want to reel.
Because you hooked a merman.
We didn't know what the hell we had on. We didn't want to hurt it, you know?
Holy shit.
So yeah, that seal has a hook in its face and decided to eat another.
That was
frightening. Yeah. But yeah, that was the weirdest thing at night, a seal.
We caught the fall before. I went out with my brother's fiance's father and his buddies. We went out and at night we caught a stingray. That was the first. I'd never caught a stingray. I've seen manta rays.
I've never seen a stingray.
Never seen a stingray. And I had no idea what the hell was like. The fight was bizarre. That made me think of your seal fight where it's like you're just like trying to make sense as to like what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
Because it was on my tip rod, and the initial bite was just like a swordfish. It was just like the rod just shuddered, and it was just like, that was it. It was like, oh, we just got a sword bite. Moved the bait around a couple of times and then loaded up. And like, I was like, oh, we got a swordfish. This is going to be great. And then it like fought kind of like a swordfish at first, and then it was not like a swordfish. And I was like, wait a second, what the hell is going on? Like, do we have a little tuna or something? What's going on? This is weird. And it was a stingray. Like the guy going on the boat is like, oh, good, the wings, great eats. Oh, it's like, geez. I am not bringing that. We brought the damn stingray home on the boat.
Did you kill the stingray?
I have no idea what type of stingray it was. I was like, if you want to do it, I'm getting out of the way. I'm not being
someone listening to this.
Yeah, you're like, shit.
That's a spotted black stingray. That's, you know.
It was like reddish.
You're gonna have a bill in the mail next week for like $700,000 for a fucking stingray.
Endangered stingray harvesting.
I mean, I probably could have named the thing because I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, that's wild. It was like a substantial size.
It wasn't that big.
Like the ones you see in Florida, probably.
Yeah.
It was
like this table, like
Yeah. About maybe a touch smaller.
That's fucking wild.
But it had like the legit like hard stinger.
Oh, like, dude, I would not get the whip tail.
I was like, I'm staying away. I literally walked away. It was like, my boots aren't thick enough for that. Yeah. Like, nope.
Oh my God. That's pretty cool.
My brother got hit by a stingray when we were in Costa Rica one time. We were out surfing and he stepped on one. Oh. And he's a tough dude. And I've never seen him in pain like that. So that's my lesson of like, if I can avoid getting stung by a stingray my whole life, I'm going to try and do everything I can to do that.
What's your most painful fishing experience?
He already told this on the first one. I was just about to say this. Yeah. One of them anyway. That fucking story about the plug in your arm.
Oh, yeah. When I
wrapping it up and fishing the rest of the day.
I forgot about that one. I was talking about the one when he brought it in like alive still and then beat the shit out of the boat.
That one too.
But you didn't. No one got hurt on that one, right?
No, nobody got hurt on that one.
How about like other painful like, or scary stories.
You had
something scary happen on the boat.
I'm trying to think of one too.
Fishing or just boating in general?
Anything. Running into a rock?
I've had a couple of times where we've had some incidents boating that have been a little scary. There was one year went out with my brother and his buddy. His buddy's got a Hydrosport, like a 20-foot Hydrosport center console. And he hadn't caught a tuna before. He'd tried a few times. Mm-hmm. So we're like, all right, let's go out and go catch one. And so we did. We hooked one. We caught one. And tried to bring it on the boat. And it wasn't like a monster for the bay, but it was low 90s.
Yeah.
And when it came on, it cracked it like so the where the outboard is, it's basically like just a piece of plastic that was basically keeps the water out, and it folds down.
Folding,
yeah, you know, one of the ones that fold. And that when we brought the fish on board, it smacked that down, broke it, and we hadn't been paying attention, but his in-deck live well had been leaking into the bilge. And when we were fighting the fish, hadn't really realized that the bilge was hadn't been running. And so there was a lot of water in the bilge. And then all of a sudden we get the weight of the fish on and we start sinking. And so we put the boat, I'm like, put the boat in gear. Let's try and get the water back and get the bilges to kick on and whatever. And there was enough water in the bilges that it blew up the little circular caps in the deck.
Holy fuck.
And so one of them went overboard. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. And the water's still coming in from the transom.
Oh, shit.
So, and I got the other one, like, secured. Bilge is running. And, like, you know, we're basically just chugging along, like, trying to get the water back without, like, sinking the engine underwater. Wow. And I remember shoving the harpoon ball in the other cap hole that had opened up, because now you got a 10-inch hole in the back of the deck that is getting water from the transom pushing in. Finally, we were able to get the boat up on plane and get the rest of the water out, but that was a little hairy for probably about 60 or 90 seconds.
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
Sinking isn't good.
No.
And we had this past fall was we had a rough night. I brought the Viking down to Florida, and me and my brother, it was just the two of us making the trip. And we tried to do it quickly. We tried to do it, you know, safely, but quickly. And we were trying to beat a storm, which ended up turning into a hurricane, which in hindsight was, I'm glad that we got stuck where we got stuck, because the storm was worse in Florida. When we left Massachusetts, the storm was like, it was predicted to be just like windy down in Florida. And we're like, as long as we can get down there before the wind, we're good. And we lost an engine. And we were going 10 knots from Beaufort, North Carolina to try and make it to St. Simons overnight. And just 10 knotting it. And I lost an engine overnight. And it was pretty shitty out. So we had to chug in on one engine into Charleston. That sucked.
That sucks.
The slow chug sucks.
Slow chug.
And then you're trying to maneuver in the marina to dock at the end of the day too.
Yeah.
You're like
unfamiliar harbors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, that happened one other time where we were in the canyons and we lost an engine and we had to chug home. And my bright idea was, well, we're going to go slow anyway. Might as well throw out.
Always.
Man, we hooked a blue marlin. And that was the worst experience, because like there's nothing you could do. Like
You get spooled.
Yeah. Well, we didn't get spooled. I just like locked it up and just like basically like put as much pressure on it as I could. We busted it at the crimp. But man, that
the
was
one species you don't want to hook while doing that.
Yeah. I was like, we can't turn. We can't chase after it. We can't.
Yeah.
Go in. That was. So now it's like, all right, if we're going to chug, maybe we put out like a Wahoo lure, a single one. we're not putting out any marlin plugs if we don't have both engines.
Holy shit. It's unbelievable.
Oh, what about you guys? You guys have any scary boat moments?
I've told it in another one when I had the guy have a heart attack on the boat. Yeah. That sucked. That was scary.
Did you have to airlift them?
No, we were only like 3 miles out, 2 miles out, but we got boarded going full speed back into the harbor. We went 16 knots all the way to like through the harbor, all the way to the gas dock.
Yeah.
Which isn't fast, but when you're throwing a 3 to 4 foot wake,
right,
going in, it's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Things you wish you could do on a normal day, kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Just waving to everybody that's like on the sailboat.
That's
like
what the harbor masters do to go.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a scary time. I'm trying to think what other One moment that has nothing to do with like an actual injury or anything was seeing manta rays come out from under the boat one time at night. That scared the living shit out of me.
Yeah.
I was up all night, night watch, watching the sword rods, and I'm standing over the corner of the boat looking at like the little baby fish and the cute little freaking squids, and this like 12-foot wide manta ray came out from under the boat out. Couldn't have been more than 6 inches from the hull of the boat. Like the whole, and it to the point that it cut, like it made the whole light dark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I nearly shit myself and I fell on the deck. I remember I fell on the deck just like backwards. Just from like, I thought something was coming out to eat me.
Yeah.
Like I thought it was some kind of sea monster like coming up to like eat, like saw me looking over the side. Cause you know, when you're like looking over, you almost want to like dip net some of the weird little things that, yeah, on, you know, near the lights.
The thing with like the little creatures, yeah, the that little have creatures. Like four wings on, yeah,
weird shit. And you're like, what is that? That's an alien. But that thing was huge. And there was actually two of them. But just like the circumstance, it was grease calm. It was staring, like looking right where the thing came out from under, came right from the corner of the boat, fell back, and my heart was through my chest. That's awesome. And I was all by myself and no one saw it. It was just like, that was a freaky moment. Not sinking, you know, you're not sinking or anything, but I thought I was actually going to get eaten.
Yeah. Nighttime's trippy out there sometimes.
Yeah.
This was a funny nighttime story, but like not, it wasn't scary. It was just funny. We were at one time and my buddy was passed out on the mezzanine and, you know, I'm up pretty much the entire time. I'll take a 15-minute nap here or there. So sometimes, you know, especially at night, to keep myself entertained, we'll mess around with people that are sleeping on the mezzanine or whatever, put a little squid in their face or something like yeah. that when it's their turn to wake up. You know, everybody's got to sleep, but, yeah. you know, it's like, let's get a creative way to wake
you
gotta
up. You got to pay your dues.
And so I remember a flying fish jumped into the boat and hit him square in the face. And he was like, what the hell, man? Why do you have to do that?
I'm You're like, I didn't do
I
that.
I swear I didn't. And the thing's like flopping around still. So I was like, look, see, I promise you, I didn't do that.
Oh, that's too good. Yeah. I don't know if I... wasn't like I felt safe because of who was operating the boat. I was with Jamie, Joe Byram, Sam Steele. It was like 4 or 5 years ago in PEI. Like we got a fish the first day and then the second day was like nasty. And then like the third day was kind of like, it's fishable, but it's going to be fucking gross. And we fished off North Lake, like 3 miles.
Fishable gross. There's like 8 to 12s.
It was all of 10 to 12.
Yeah.
All of it. And, coming in and out of there. Have you ever been up there?
No, I haven't.
So they have like this run. It's just like rip rap on either side. You can fit like one boat through at a time. And, it was northwest. So it was on our ass and it was low tide and it's a bar at the mouth of that thing. And we were like coming in and timing these like 12-foot swells that were breaking behind us and trying to time our entry. And it's like, I would assume like trying to land on an aircraft carrier with like an insane tailwind. I would assume it was fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrifying. Like thinking like the roughest outgoing tide, northeast wind situation at the North River.
Yeah.
And then trying to come into the river.
Yeah.
And that. That's and terrifying. Then it's only 4 feet deep, like right where the break wall starts.
3.9.
You draw 3.9
or 3.11.
So he's basically like keeping his running gear like in the face of the wave behind him. And then as he drops down, throttling as he comes, you know, into the break wall. That was hairy.
Yeah, I bet.
But those guys are where
they got to be at the right speed and everything.
And Jamie's like having a full conversation with everyone. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, go tomorrow. I'm like, you're thinking about tomorrow. I'm thinking about getting to tomorrow. like, I can't even think that far ahead right now, pal. I just want to make sure we're going to be fucking live.
You know, it's bad. You know, it's kind of hairy when you're not the one driving and you're still clenched up.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, yeah. I trust you, kind of.
I think it's worse not driving. Like, I would rather drive
when
it's rough.
Yeah.
then have someone else drive.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a crazy inlet for sure.
We had, reminds me of a funny story from when I worked down in the Outer Banks. I did the season bluefin down there with the Canyon Runner guys. And there was one day we were coming out and it gets hairy down there coming out of Oregon Inlet. And the other mate on the boat, we looked down and he's strapped in with a life jacket. and I remember looking at and just like scratching my head, and I was fishing with Mark de Blasio, and hey Mark, what's going on down there? And he calls the mate up. I'm not gonna say his name. He's, come on up here. What the hell are you doing? He's, well, Cap, it's a little rough out, so I decided to put my life jacket on. Don't want to go for a swim. Now I'm safe. He's like, you are scaring the client. The charter is terrified because the mate is wearing a life jacket. Like, we told him where the life jackets are, but we didn't say put on life jackets.
Right, right.
He's like, you're scaring them.
That's amazing. So funny.
Just walking around with a life jacket on.
Our dad has done that before. He's like, you don't need it. He's like, unless you see me run past you in a life jacket, like, you don't need to be worried. You don't need to be worried. And then he'll wait till like everyone's asleep on the boat and like fucking rifling through safety gear, fires a life jacket on, like runs out. Everyone's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, boys, I want to make sure we get to Tommy's nonprofit and family stuff. I know it's like a complete switch gear going for 2 hours. So tell us about Toka's Friends.
Yeah. So Toka's Friends is a nonprofit that my parents actually started several years ago. And it's aimed at training and placing service dogs for military veterans with PTSD and TBI. And so right now we're trying to place 4 dogs a year and match them up with veterans that are really struggling with kind of the effects of serving. And I think it's a really good opportunity to kind of recognize and try to make a difference in the community of veterans that come back and have these kind of emotional scars, these mental scars, and that they're struggling. And so what they'll do is they'll get a puppy and train it for about 18 months. And so my brother's one of the main trainers and trains it for probably about 12 months prior to actually matching it with a veteran. Mm. Gets basic training plus all sorts of like additional training, and then matching the dog to a veteran and doing another 6 months of kind of progressive training with the veteran to say, you know, here's the ways in which you need to kind of handle the dog. And it's kind of like training the veteran as well as the dog and kind of doing some specific training to a particular veteran's needs. Wow. Too. Like, so some of the guys that have PTSD might also have some sort of a physical condition. So my brother will train the dog to, help the veteran out of a chair, right? So it's like you got a rope and then the dog kind of, the veteran will hold the rope and the dog pulls the rope to kind of help him out of the chair. Like that. It's really cool. And I've had the pleasure to like kind of meet a handful of the veterans that have gotten the dogs, and they're awesome guys, and you can just tell the impact that it's had on them and their lives. So it's really cool. But it's like a nonprofit. It's not funded by anything other than fundraising efforts. It's pretty cool.
How do people get involved?
Yeah. So there's a website, tokasfriends.org. There's options for donations there. We haven't figured out how to do a fishing related tournament or anything like that to kind of do a fundraiser, but we are doing a golf tournament fundraiser in June of this year. there's information on the website about that if anybody wants to sign up for that. And then usually in the fall, we do a pig roast as kind of a fundraiser as well. Just get a big pig and smoke it for
that's cool
8 hours. And
what if there'd be a way to get like a handful of them with their dogs on some of the boats and go like tuna fishing for a day?
That'd be pretty wild.
And we bring him all the time. And
yeah,
we've had other people bring dogs as well. That'd be a lot of fun.
It would be,
you know?
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
That's really cool. You guys have been, I'm assuming, dog family for a long time. And your brother trains dogs to, you know, as service animals, but also like the hunt and stuff as well. Or like, how did he kind of get into that whole thing?
Yeah, he kind of found his way into it, not through like training dogs to hunt. We actually, he trained his personal dog for a little bit of duck hunting, but yeah. I wouldn't say that was its primary function in life. You know, it's like, there's certain dogs that it's like, they're a tool for duck hunting or bird hunting or whatever. His dog's not quite that level.
Yeah.
But my brother's like a dog whisperer. It's like incredible. Like some of my buddies will bring my buddies will be like, hey, can your brother just like do something for my dog for like a week? And the dog walks in and my brother's like already having it do shit that like my buddy can't do. Like,
pretty cool.
It's bizarre. Like I don't have an explanation for it. It's like he literally talks to the dogs. It's like the dog just like comes up to him and sits down right next to him and like just completely leaves.
See, that's all you gotta do.
And so yeah, he's really talented with that.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Now if you could do that with swordfish.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Cool. That's a good thing you guys are doing.
Yeah.
I'm sure people will listen to this and check it out. And maybe we'll figure out a way we can do something too.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
And even if it's not that, you know, I think the effects that a lot of the veterans have coming back, like people, you know, I think there needs to be more of a focus as a general population on helping serve the veterans as they come back.
Mm. 1,000,000% agree. What else you got? Anything?
No, that was a good way to end it.
That was great. As always, thank you for doing this.
Yeah, just thanks, guys. It.
Wealth of knowledge. Always learn multiple things when we sit down and talk to you. It's a blast. And we'll definitely do this many times in the future as well. So I guess we'll just end it on our father's three words of fishing wisdom. Remember, you can't catch them if you don't have a hook in the water. Always trust your instincts. And the last one, you just have to keep listening. Stay tight, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Seabros Fishing Podcast. If you'd like more information on today's guest, products that we use, or other podcast partners, please check out the description for this episode on our website, seabrosfishing.com. For information on our tail and fish artwork commissions, or to order our hats and other products, please check out our website or shoot us a message on Instagram. Make sure you check out our YouTube channel, give it a like and subscribe. And finally, if you want to book a fishing charter with us on one of the Mass Bay Guides boats, please visit massbayguides.com and call the office to book a trip. We appreciate you all.